Hey guys, if you're looking for a really fun hunt, me and the boys at Days in the Wild Outfitters, my guiding service, we offer a handful of hunts in December, January, and February for deer and javelina. Archery deer is December and January, and it's over the counter. There's still some tags left over for javelina. And we offer hunts in February during the ham season, which is handgun, archery, muzzleloader, and during the rifle season. And it's super fun. Awesome hunt, man. Everybody loves that. Everybody who's ever came out has had an amazing time. You have a lot of shot opportunities, just tons of action, spot and stalk. You know, multiple stalks per day. So don't fret that your season is coming to an end. There's still a couple of months worth of really good hunting. Hit me up on Facebook or Instagram. Send me a message, or you could check out daysinthewild.com and give me a call or send me an email through the blog, and we could chat about putting together a hunt for you. Let's roll into this next episode.
Hi, welcome to Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, do a little recap of whitetail season in New York. And we're going to talk to my cousin, actually my wife's cousin, but we call him my cousin now, Michael Valdamas. Mike's kind of like my hunting partner when I go back east. So I kind of got him into hunting 12 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you hunted a little bit with your dad, but didn't bow hunt, really.
No, just shot archery, but not bow hunting. More rifle.
So, anyway, well, give us a little quick rundown about yourself, Mike.
So, Michael Valdamas, born in Manhattan, raised on Long Island in the Hamptons my whole life. Been, you know, an outdoorsman type person, you know, and personality my whole life. So naturally gravitated towards, you know, hunting and bow hunting as I matured. I'm 33 years old currently. Have a beautiful fiance and a beautiful daughter. You know, we have, you know, between us, we have a happy and healthy family, which is, you know, something that we're blessed with. And as a profession, I've done many things throughout my life, but I have settled in and opened up a woodworking company, furniture building company, which is my passion, called Rustic Nature. I create all types of different furniture, mostly specializing in the live edge slabs and farm style stuff. And I have a whole 360 process ranging from, you know, milling the felled trees into my own lumber and, you know, into a finished product and that shows up in people's homes. So,
awesome, awesome. Well, and what the listeners might be really interested in is Mike is also a bowyer. He builds recurves and longbows.
Well, not more of a novice bowyer at this point.
I think you're doing a nice job, man. I've been doing it for longer than you, and your shit's like way nicer than mine.
Well, that's where the furniture and woodworking comes into play. I am meticulous. I'll give myself that.
Yeah, that's for sure. So we could, we could start all the way at the beginning with the, before we get into, like when I was there, my season, whatever, but going way back when we first originally discovered this public land that we hunt, and we're not going to really go over where it's somewhere in the Hamptons somewhere. Public land that is surrounded by private, and so it hunts a lot like private. And up until just recently, I don't think anybody else was ever hunting it since you and I started hunting it. How long has it been now? Almost 10 years?
I think we're going on 10 years now. Yes.
Yeah. Been a long time. This is where the same piece of property that I took the famed swamp
donkey.
Yeah. But and so when we discovered this land, you know, we were hunting nearby. We were hunting very close by, what? Not even a mile away, right?
Literally, yeah. So we were hunting a spot.
We had permission from a friend.
Yeah, that I remember Manny gave us permission to hunt the property there. And, you know, upon seeing, you know, the potential of, you know, that 2 square mile area, we just, you know, we started scouting. And then, you know, that's when you had discovered on Google Maps this particular spot. And it's progressed ever since then. And I mean, the specific spot where you shot Swamp Donkey and where I shot this buck this year, mm-hmm. Really that, which is, we'll call it the northern side of, that area that we hunt. So, cause we hunt basically the north and the south of that road that runs there.
Right.
That northern spot I had no clue about until you had Swamp Dompy come in, and that first year that you had seen him, and then he was a ghost for what, almost 2 years after that, until we decided to scout a little bit more, and you ended up discovering that northern side of the road where.
Well, I discovered the northern side of the road. I mean, we knew it was there, but we just didn't know how it would haunt or whatever. But I end up venturing onto that side is because I shot that one buck.
Oh, that's right.
Last day, remember, and I hit him a little far back, and he crossed the road.
That's right.
And I trailed him across the road without my bow in my hand. The very next day, I let him lay overnight. And I went across. I got permission from the lady, who affectionately became the Mexican lady, we called her, for a long time. We used to,
right.
to actually get permission before we met Brian. We would park there. Anyhow, that buck ran across the road, and I trailed it after I got permission to cross her yard, because it went right across her yard.
Right.
Into that swamp area over there. And when I was walking up on my buck, their Swamp Donkey was standing right over the dead buck, watching me walk down the trail. And that's when I put all the pieces of the puzzle together, able to get him killed.
Right. And that was like during that time where I was in, so to speak, of that hunting hiatus. I had, you know, a few things going on, you know, personally and, you know, financially at the time, and just hunting just wasn't in the picture for me. So that's when you were coming out, and that was that couple years where it's just you were pretty much on your own in those spots.
Yeah.
When you really ended up first hanging that stand there.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Which, so
as infectiously became the killing tree.
Yeah, the killing tree. I mean, I have it on my Onyx app. It's literally labeled as the truck stop, because you know there's that truck there. Yeah. And literally all those 4 scrapes that have been there for who knows how many years are literally there. I see them as truck stops, because every single buck stops at them.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that's hilarious. Yeah, that tree's been freaking. It's a shitty tree, crooked as fuck. It's a little annoying to sit in, because you're sitting cockeyed the whole time. Even in a nice Millennium tree stand, we only hunt out of Millenniums, because they're cush and comfy.
Yeah, because I can literally
my life if I'm not comfortable.
I literally within the past 3 weeks to a month, I have to say I have almost 30 sits in right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I literally have almost 30 sits in. And so those Millennium tree stands, they just outperform anything I've ever sat in.
Yeah, I agree.
They really do.
They're really tough to beat. Really tough.
I mean, it's they're so comfortable. I'm not even on my phone that much.
Yeah, you can kind of
you can concentrate on everything else.
It's easy to fall asleep in them. And by the way, we're not sponsored by Millennium or anything. I'm just putting that out there. We like those stands a lot. Anyhow, so yeah, that particular tree, I've killed personally now on 4 bucks out of that stand.
Yeah.
Including Swamp Donkey. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And maybe then there's the, which is the original killing tree, which now gets called the old stand.
The old stand, which is on the south side. It's still to this day.
And we got to take that thing down because now it's like it's starting to get a little scary on how rusted shit is on that thing.
And how bad the tree has literally grown around it. So I'm actually going to take that down and put one of the Millenniums up there for the rest of this season.
Nice. That so the original tree was where I killed Swamp Donkey. The old stand is where I killed Swamp Donkey Jr.
Jr., yeah.
And a number of other bucks, including my recurve buck from last year.
Yeah, which is a phenomenal shot. I mean, that tree is so tall, especially with that ravine, how it drops down.
45 feet.
Yeah, it's – I really, with the recurve, I don't know how you gauge that shot. Because when I'm up there, from where that buck was standing and you shot him, mm-hmm. I recreate that shot in my head, especially when I got the recurve in my hand, and I'm just like, I don't know how John pulled this off. I'm like, that's a shot and a half.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised myself. It was one of those things where I saw him coming out from that back spot over there, and I'm going to go and kill my dogs right now. They haven't stopped barking.
I put mine away already.
That's because somebody just came out to my front door. Anyway, so I saw him go into that spot from the far corner of the swamp, and he went into that back left-hand corner.
Yeah.
And then I had does that were down to my right and a little spike, and they were feeding down to my right, like, you know, on the trail that passes to the right of that stand?
Yep.
And yeah. I hit the can twice real quick, and he came popping back out of there, and he was coming through those little brush down below. And yeah, it's 20 yards line. It's 20 yards. He's 20 yards away from the tree at that spot, but it's a 45. I'm 45 foot up in the air. So it's like, yeah, it's pretty steep, crazy shot, but I didn't stand up for it. I shot sitting down, and
which that bear recurve is small enough to do so. I mean, you're talking about a 48 inch length. I mean, that's awesome. It really is. No matter what, even if I could probably take the shot with my recurve sitting down, I stand up every time.
Yeah. I know. Well, originally, when you started off the season, you were hunting with the reflex deflex, the long one, right?
Yeah, which is a 62-inch length, and I missed that first buck that gave me that opportunity this season. I missed him because when I drew back, I didn't realize that the bottom part of the string was hitting the support cable on the stand. So naturally, when I let off, it just raised my shot, and I nicked the hairs on his shoulder.
Crazy. So anyway, I got out there this season. I got there about 5 days earlier than we normally go, and the moon wasn't great. Weather wasn't great.
If you want to put it into literal terms, the moon sucked that week.
Yeah, it sucked. We had quite a few. I hadn't run cameras in a while, just because I don't really need to. I know how the deer use the land. So I mean, the only reason why we've run cameras is to see
particulars.
Yeah, to see what deer we want to shoot. And normally, I'm only there for a week, so I don't get super duper particular unless there's a buck or two that I had seen the year before,
right,
that I know if he's still around, he's going to be a monster. Well, this year that was the case. We had the year before, I wasn't being picky at all because I was hunting with my recurve. We had two bucks, a buck called Bullwinkle and another buck called Bleeds.
Which both of them are MIA right now.
Yeah, I wonder if they went somewhere else and they got shot or something. I don't know.
Well, Brian has patterned Blades to be MIA during the rut, and then after the rut, he'll venture back.
Oh, okay. So he noticed that last year then.
Yes. So Brian noticed that last year with Blades in particular. Bullwinkle, I haven't seen, but that drop time buck has come in on me. I actually missed on him a few days ago.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it was just the way he came in and how the window I had to take the shot. It just I wasn't prepared for it.
Did you turn the bow on yourself?
I literally I wanted to jump out of the stand, but
that buck's nice, man. That drop sign's sick. Okay, so yeah, we have Blades and Bullwinkle last year, and they were both nice bucks. They were 3.5 year old deer. Our friend Brian, he asked me, he had him, he called me, he's like, do you think I should shoot this buck? I'm like, he's a 3.5 year old deer, he's a nice deer, but next year and the following year he's going to be a freaking stud. And he showed reserve and he passed that buck, and so we knew he was alive and we were getting him on camera this year. But it seemed like I kept switching back and forth from my normal pattern is I will sit the old stand in the morning because I know I can slip in there without bumping deer.
Right.
And I sit the killing tree on the north side in the afternoons. Well, the first couple of days, it seemed like the deer were doing the exact opposite of what I was doing. And then when I switched to do the other thing, those deer were doing the opposite of what I was doing. You know, I had several opportunities. What are you dropping things over there?
Yeah, I did drop the microphone.
Nice. So I had several opportunities at okay deer, you know, 2.5, 3.5 year old deer that were you know. But I was hunting with my compound. Because I was going to bring the recurve, but my neck was bothering me so bad that I couldn't shoot it effectively. So I had to switch back to the compound for that hunt. Yeah, and there just wasn't anything that I wanted to shoot. I ended up shooting a doe. There was a couple of mornings where I was like, oh, I'm going to go do this. And then I talked myself out of it, and I went and did the other thing, and sure as shit, I had Bullwinkle and Blee. So, you know, my season was this was the first year as an adult that I've bow hunted in Long Island that I did not shoot a buck.
Yeah, which I was surprised because literally every time you come, you pretty much tag out every year that we've been hunting this area.
Yeah, honestly, even before that, like even before we found this, I mean, there were smaller bucks and not as nice, but I always tagged out. I mean, I know I could have tagged out. I had that big 6 point that you were talking about the other day. I had him at 10 yards or 15 yards or whatever. I could have, and he was there for 20 minutes just milling around underneath me. I could have killed him, but
yeah, which pretty much lately it's like, I don't know. It's like he's, you know, gravitated towards me because he literally doesn't leave me alone. every time I sit, he comes by, whether he's chasing a doe or he's just, you know, on the prowl or running his route. I probably could have shot him, you know, 30 times in the last, you know, 7 to 10 days.
Wow. There's a couple other bucks there. There's two, I call them crazy heads, the crazy head brothers. There's one that's younger. He's definitely a year younger,
which is the one I originally missed at the beginning of the season.
And then there's a one that's got quite a, you know, he probably scores pretty damn good.
Yeah, which the double main beam on his right side is the
double main beam, and then what, like 4.4 different
spiked. I don't know. He's basically got a briar patch on the top of his head.
It's crazy. He's such a cool looking buck. And that other buck has either got to be his offspring or his younger brother or something.
Definitely same bloodline. 100%.
See, I passed that buck. I had him too. But he was young. I knew he was, you know, he's a 2.5-year-old deer. That other buck is probably 3.5, 4.
Which both of them have given me plenty of opportunities as well.
Next year, I'm shooting that buck, I'm telling you.
I think next year he's going to be nice. I really do.
I don't know if he's shedding. I don't know. He might be a stag. I have no clue. But I didn't see any velvet. Did you see any velvet on him? I had him. Yards, I didn't see any velvet.
Okay. No, I had him literally. I could have spat on him. He was, both of them have been right underneath my stand constantly as well. It seems like the younger bucks in that area, they're not as proficient as, you know, judging pressure in the area. So they'll just be coming back and forth. And especially now that you know, everything is on as far as rut concerned, they're pretty stupid. If you want to be honest about it, I think they're pretty stupid. At least the last week and a half to 2 weeks, they've been acting that way. But yeah, I mean, you got to remember too. I mean, even though that we're not seeing in this particular area, we're not seeing 130, 140 inch deer, but you got to understand that it's the nature of the region. There's not much of a food source in those swamps. So I mean, these deer, even though, you know, they are what they are, they're still, you know, they're still substantial for where they're living.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's been, I mean, Blades and Bowwinkle are 135 inch deer. They're good. That drop time buck is probably close to that too.
Yeah, he's close to there, as but he's just, as far as what I would consider shooter, he's a little light on the mass right now. So, I mean, me and Brian have discussed about it, and if the opportunity arises where he comes in front of either or of us, we've decided that we're going to pass on him this year.
Well, because he's going to be an absolute stud, and plus you're saving him for me.
Which, yes, that's another reason why me and Brian discussed that.
Oh, that's funny. Actually, he just tried calling me right now.
Yeah, I you know, what's funny is that the drop time buck is the one, you know, that came in on me a few days ago and that I missed. And I even said to Brian this morning, because I got out of the stand this morning and I was talking to Brian, and I said, you know what, Brian, I'm actually glad that I missed him, even though it broke my heart that, you know, whether I missed that at him or any other buck, it's just, no archer likes to miss. No bow hunter likes to miss. Yeah. Of course, you know, hunting with the recurve, your chances of that are a little greater. Because, but, you know, you and I, especially, you put a compound in our hands and it doesn't matter. We put that pin on them, they're down.
Yeah.
You know, you give us the opportunity where we can put that pin on them and they're down. That's pretty much how it goes with the compound.
Recurve is a whole different story for sure.
Yeah, it really is, which, I mean, to touch on that aspect of the conversation a little bit, I mean, making the switch to, you know, hunt and recurve and, you know, focusing on my traditional archery has really brought, you know, the hunting and the adrenaline rush back for me, because I kind of lost that a little bit with the compound, even though I really, in the last few years, I haven't shot in anything significant with the compound. Not that I was even out there hunting as much as I'd like to or I wanted to. I just lost that buck fever, so to speak. I lost it. And even now, I could be sitting up there with the recurve and I could have a doe walk underneath me and my heart starts pumping like crazy. So, I mean, getting into that aspect of, you know, hunting and archery again has really come full circle for me.
Yeah, and I mean, I totally could see that, because when I shot the buck last year with my recurve, I was like, it really felt like the first time all over.
Right, right.
It was pretty freaking amazing. Like, I felt
I don't know. I can't even explain.
It's like this euphoria that just comes over you. Just like you said, like it's the first time you shot, you know, a buck or a deer in general with a bow. It's
so anyway, after I left, go ahead. Let me hear the story, because I got bits and pieces of it, but I didn't get the whole shebang here.
So you had left, and right before you left, you remember we had seen my friend Gonzalo in the deli that day, who was like, hey, you guys are hunting back there. Somebody left a note on my door saying, you know, they walked by the tree stand, you know, mentioning that they had been hunting there for a while and this and that. So anyway, I ended up calling this person up who left the note on Gonzalo's door. You know, for the listeners out there, Gonzalo is a friend of mine who lives on the adjacent property to the area that we hunt. And a long story short, it's this guy who lives on the island. His name is Mike Gamachi. He's actually turned out to be a great guy, and he's a new friend to me. And we've been hunting a lot together the last few weeks. So the day that I shot this buck, Mike and I were sitting about 40 yards apart from each other. Mike was sitting further up north on the trail, and that's in that swamp. And it had to have been about 7:30 in the morning. Conditions were perfect. I think that morning we had a northeast wind that morning, and it was literally perfect. I mean, to touch up on a little bit, especially in this area, I don't think that these deer are really pressured too much. I mean, I know we spoke about it on the phone a little bit. I don't think these deer are pressured too much about scent, because them living in such close proximity to so many different aspects of human life. I mean, you got residential area there, you got commercial area there. There's so much going on. The scent really doesn't matter too much in this particular spot. I mean, then again, you go a mile down the road to my friend's farm, and if those deer get a whiff of you, they're gone.
Let me clarify that though. So if you're doing your scent control and you're hanging your stands up high and you're
right,
you know, coming in on, you know, coming in the right way, those deer expect to smell human scent in where they're used to seeing humans.
Right.
As soon as you get off of that, they don't expect it. They turn inside out and they're gone. So, and if you're really good about controlling your scent, they just think, oh, that little whiff of human that I just caught is, you know, somebody had walked down that, you know, there's a trail that humans use kind of often, not super often, but or it's somebody in their backyard close enough that I can smell them.
Right.
So they don't like, you know, but they get on alert. They just don't turn inside out and blow out and run.
Right.
So it's not that they're stupid. It's just that they've learned and they've desensitized a little bit, because they know there's a lot of humans there around them that if they ran every time they caught a little whiff of human smell,
they'd never stop running.
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. So I'm glad that you touched up on that detail about it. But yeah, it was a northwest wind. So I mean, even if it was a situation, I mean, it was more my favor as far as, you know, the wind goes. And so this buck had come in from that grassy north trail, and I never saw him at first. So he was literally hanging out by the fence over by that town yard that's back there. You know, so as we're sitting in the killing tree, it'd be off to our left towards a little behind us. You know, that big stockade fence, you know, that's probably about 150 yards away from us.
Mm-hmm.
So he was hanging around there, and I heard Mike grunting a little bit, and you know, so I picked up the binos and I just gandered over that way. So I literally, I never saw, you know, this deer's face. I literally saw the back end of him constantly just because the way he was ducking in and out of the hardwoods there. And so Mike was grunting a little bit. So I said, you know what? We're kind of in a good scenario. We're kind of able to do a good scenario here. So, you know, mentally to myself, I'm like, you know, I'm going to start grunting a little bit. So this deer thinks, hey, there's two bucks in this area that, you know, are communicating with each other. Because Mike is like about 40 yards away from me. So I play it off a little bit. Now, when I mean grunting, we're not talking about something, you know, substantial where it's, hey, let's, you know, start kicking each other's asses. Where it's just, you know, something, you know, slight. Just letting you know, hey, I'm over here. Hey, and, you know, hey, I'm over here too. So we got had this little bit of a communication going on as far as us grunt calling. We did that for about 30 to 45 seconds total. And then we let it calm down. So I took out my rack pack and just did a light sparring for about another 30 to 45 seconds. Then put it back in my bag because now we're still pre-rut here. You know what I mean? I mean, it could have been that they started to get into that mode, but I was still considering it pre-rut because it was October 28th. It's October 28th, 2 days after I missed that buck, 2 days after my birthday, which missing that buck, I thought I was in the sitting in the stand thinking I was going to get a nice birthday buck, which I didn't. But I guess my birthday present came a little late, so to speak. So anyway, 15 minutes goes by and this buck is still in that area. He just never came down our way. Or at least Mike said later on, you know, talking with Mike said that he just stayed over in that area. I thought he had left because I lost sight of him. Mike had a better vantage point, and I just lost sight of him. So I thought this buck had gone. I never thought anything about it. So now I'm just in back to regular sitting mode, you know, observation mode. You know, my head's going, okay, I know they come this way. Some of the deer come down this trail. Some of the deer come from in this trail. They crisscross, but eventually they go back down this one trail and they head into the swamp in the mornings. They come from either the north or the south, and then they head east into the swamp. So that's where my focus is. All of a sudden, I look to my left, and I see this buck coming right down the pipe. I mean, it's like it just fell in my lap. So he's about 60 yards out, and he's coming straight down. And now he's coming right across Mike's in front of Mike. And I think I'm just waiting to hear thwack and see this deer kick and start running. Because, I mean, he had a clear open shot. Nope, I didn't hear anything. So yeah. I'm like, what's going on? What happened? Did he not notice him? Or was he just cruising a little too fast for him to get, you know, a good shot off on him? So this buck literally comes right my way. And you know it, those two scrapes that are on the same side of the trail that we are on, and then there's the one scrape on the opposite side.
Right.
So there's three scrapes right there. So he came in on and hit the scrapes on our side, and was literally hitting that scrape, I'd say a minute and a half that I have him on film.
Awesome.
And, you know, I'm standing up at this point, and you know, my left arm is pointed out down towards him with the bow in my hand and fingers on the string. And I'm just waiting for the right time to pull back because, again, hunting recurve, we don't have that let off. We don't have that luxury to sit there for, you know, 35, 40 seconds or a minute with, you know, 80% let off.
For sure.
Yeah. So I'm just waiting for the correct time to draw back and get my anchor in. And he's just, this buck is just focused on, you know, tearing up this scrape and, you know, rubbing his head on that upper limb right there that hangs right over it. So then he stops doing that and he's looking straight at my direction. So now he's looking south. He's not looking up at me. He's just looking past underneath the stand.
Right.
And then I hear Mike grunt with the call. And I mean, so Mike had been watching the whole thing play out the whole time and knew to make the right decision to pick that call up and put it in his hand and make a bit of a grunt to make that buck turn broadside, because that's exactly what happened. Mike grunted, and that buck took 3-4 steps out from being on the edge of that trail right into the middle broadside. And I didn't even bother because he was so close. He was, I think, 10, 11 yards at most.
That is 14 yards.
Is it?
Yeah, it's 14 yards.
Okay, so
that's the exact spot that I shot Swamp Donkey, so I know it very well.
And that's the other thing too. It's literally the exact way that Swamp Donkey came in and the way you took him out, which is great. I mean, the two of us got great bucks in the same situation, almost in the same manner. So this buck turns broadside, takes 2-3 steps, and you know I drew back, anchored in. And I know that with my recurve, 20 yards is broadhead on target. So I just aimed at the white, and I let him have it. And I literally drilled him. I mean, it couldn't get any more perfect. I took out both airbags and his heart. And this buck, I mean, his first jump had to have been 15 feet in length. He in midair, I literally saw my arrow come out in midair on his far side, and he took about a 15-foot leap, landed where that berm is right there.
Right.
Took about another, you know, once he hit the ground, he took about another 15-20 steps in a half circle and circled back. So now he's at a total distance of probably 25, 30 yards from me, and he's standing there, and I'm like, you know, because it's a little different with the recurve. You know, I knew I hit him, but I was like, did I hit him good, or did I hit him too high? And then I just see him staring my way, and then all of a sudden he gets drunk, yeah. And he gets that wobble, and I'm like, oh, yes, thank God, he's going down. And boom, he went belly up at a total of 25 yards away from the stand. I still had eye contact with him the whole time.
Awesome.
And the feeling that just came over with me, I think on film, when you review the film, once I send it to you, the only thing I can, I think is coming out of my mouth is yes, yes, yes.
That's nice, man. That's
Actually, no, to reiterate, I think I did swear once on film.
I believe that.
I did swear once. And then literally, as soon as that buck hit the ground, my phone is ringing and it's Mike from the other set calling me. And I pick up the phone and I got a grin ear to ear. And the first words out of Mike's mouth is like, how do you like that for teamwork? And I was like, oh my God, that played out so perfect.
Nice, nice. So, and he was sitting in that one spot where you were sitting when I was sitting in that stand, right?
Yes, yes. So,
Shot the twins.
Yes.
You got a phone call, remember that day? You were sitting in that same tree that Mike sits in, right? That's what I understand.
Well, yes, same general area. That tree I was sitting in is literally probably 8 to 10 yards away from the tree that he sits in. So, you know how this, he calls it the cove tree, where after that berm, where it kind of coves out and it's a little grassy, and then there's a few trees back there. That's where he was sitting.
Okay. That's where I shot the doe with my recurve last year.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, because there's another scrape back that way.
Yeah.
But I noticed that does kept coming out of that. So I was like, I'm going to go sit over there and shoot a doe. And that's where I shot my doe. Yeah. Okay. So you've been hunting hard. You've had a couple opportunities since then to fill your second tag. And what's the plan now?
Well, the plan now is...
I saw the elaborate map that you sent me.
So I've because I've had so much seat time in this particular spot, in such a short period of time, that I've been able to observe these deer and the way they're patterning recently. So my plan is to move to the northeast side of that swamp that we are facing while we're in the kill tree.
Okay.
And see if I can get that that ginormous four pointer. Well, he's actually a five pointer. I mean, he's got one eye guard that on his right side that's about an inch and a half long.
Uh-huh.
But in general, he's on each side. He's 4 inches past each ear on each side, and he's got to be anywhere from 13 to 14 inches tall on his G1s and that main beam. It's just it's ridiculous. And the
Mike's talking about a buck. He says four. Okay, you gotta understand what a 5 point in Arizona means.
Oh yeah, well you guys with the mules.
He's a four corn. He's a four corn. Old deer, probably 6.5 years old, maybe even older. I nicknamed him Bull or Moose.
Yeah.
It's Moose, yeah, because he's just a giant body. I mean, in October, when I first got pictures of him, his neck looked like, I mean, like he was so swole up like he had been rutting already, you know?
Oh, and, well, if you see him now,
I bet
your eyes will pop out of your head.
He's a giant four corn, giant 2x2 is what he is with an eye guard. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he's enormous for, you know, like touching up on, you know, the ability for the deer to grow in specific areas that they are, because like I said, their food source mainly is ground vegetation and acorns in this particular area. You know, you go a half a mile or mile down the road to my friend's farm, and he's got, you know, 150s and 160s running around because they're eating all the corn and potatoes they want.
Right.
But he's got to be as a 2x2. He's pushing 100, 135 inches.
Yeah, he's big.
Yeah,
he's a big 2 point deer, man.
Yeah, because he was real close to me. Really, he didn't offer me a shot, but he was close enough where I could see the base of his rack, and it is literally like a Red Bull can.
Yeah, that's crazy. I hope you get that son of a bitch.
I want him. Actually, Mike almost shot him yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, Mike drew back on him at 30 yards. He was behind a tree, and Mike was waiting for him to. Now, Mike was hunting the other side of the swamp, the east side of this swamp, which Mike calls the hardwoods side. Yeah. And he had him at 30 yards behind a tree. Mike drew back and was just waiting for him to take two steps. And right now, that buck is locked down with this one particular doe, and the doe was bedding down. Doe got up and took off, and this deer just bolted right after the doe. So Mike never got the opportunity to pull the trigger.
Oh, crazy.
Which the same thing happened to me. It was like 3 or 4 days ago in the morning. He chased this doe into the kill tree area, and he came in about 30, 35 yards from me. And I just didn't have a clear shot. I just wasn't confident enough with the recurve to draw back on him in where he was. But yeah, he's who I'm after. You know, him or Blades is who I want to tag out on. That drop time buck, I want to let go. I want to see what he looks like next year. But Blades is definitely a shooter or someone I can tag out on this year. And that four pointer, he's who I'm after. He's who I want to get on the wall. I mean, because that's the other thing. Age,
you know,
what I mean. He's up there in age. Me and Brian discussed it a little bit, and from what Brian has, you know, observed over the last few years from seeing him, Brian thinks that he's, you know, definitely the 6 to 7, possibly 8 year range.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I mean, I'm excited about next year. When I left, I was like, oh, I can't wait to come back. I actually was trying to get back there again to actually hunt the rut. But, you know, I went to South Dakota.
Which you tagged out early enough over there where you could have.
I know, you know. You just
didn't want to get served divorce papers.
Exactly. I was going to ask her if she was so happy that I came home early that I was like, I ain't going to fuck this up. I'm not even going to bring it up. What I wanted to do is say, hey, babe, you want to go back to New York for Thanksgiving?
Which, yeah, it could work. Yeah. I mean, the kids had a good enough time where it might be able to play out.
Yeah, well, we already had plans, so that's not even going to work anyway. Plus, I got elk hunters right after Thanksgiving, so.
That's my next venture with the recurve. Try and get out for some elk.
But I know guys do it every year, but I am so like, even though I got a really hard hitting setup, I've seen so many elk being lost with compound that I can't even think about hunting them with recurve.
See, I'm the exact opposite right now. It's that I've brought that feeling of bow hunting back by switching to recurve that I really can't see myself, you know, venturing out with the compound. Is I'm yearning for that challenge. I want that challenge. Yeah. And you know what I mean? Especially, you know, the feeling of I made that bow myself. Granted, it was the first one piece that, you know, I pressed and laminated together, and it's literally a limb profile that was just, I threw it out there on the planning board, so to speak, and right. Just didn't know if it was going to work or if it wasn't. And, you know, it literally dumb luck that it worked. And this bow is actually performing really well. Yeah. It's 52 inches in length. And it's just like it's a happy medium. It's not too short. It's not too long. You know, I can. I've been shooting. I've been pushing out to 35 yards with it in the backyard. Pretty consistent. Like I can group. I can do a 12 inch group at 35 yards.
Yeah.
And especially with speaking with you and, you know, getting my arrow set up correctly, my shaft set up correctly, where, you know, I'm upwards in that 20% FOC, and it just makes the accuracy that much better, because initially my setup for I never knew how to tune an arrow for a recurve. I didn't know which way to go. I mean, compound bow, yeah, if it hits bullseye, what do you care? You know what I mean? It's fast enough where it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah, I mean it's not that I'm not confident with the bow. It's that it's just the power of the bow. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know if anything comes 25 yards or less, I'm going to kill it with a recurve. I don't send the flyer here and there, but I mean, I could stack the arrows just like I do with my compound at 20 yards with my recurve.
Yeah, which is how I'm pretty much shooting right now. I mean, at 20, 25 yards, you know, I have a 3-inch group of, you know, eight to 12 arrows. And it's just the feeling is great, especially, you know, taking a buck, you know, going through that whole journey, you know, getting into becoming a bowyer, so to speak, building your own recurve or building your own bow, crafting this thing, and then looking at it in the shop and saying, you know, is this thing going to be able to perform, right? Am I going to be able to put myself in the tree and in an opportunity where, you know, this thing is going to do the job and get the deed done? And it played out that it did so. And, you know, that feeling, you know, not to mention just to shoot, even though you go and purchase a recurve, whatever recurve it is or a longbow it is, and you kill, you know, a trophy animal with it, a big game animal with it. I mean, that feeling alone is astronomical, let alone the feeling I have that I made this. I just took a...
awesomest thing ever, man.
I just took a Long Island stud with something that I made.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's, I mean, I, I'm... I've thought about coming out there with one of the bows that I've made, but I always talk myself out of it. It's part of the, compound bow mentality. I want the fastest, the best performing that I have. And I mean, the other
which is 100% understandable.
All the bows, except for that one, the one horse recurve that I built, which I have to shoot off my hand, which I don't like. I like it because it's cool, but it's not something I want to hunt with.
Right.
All my longbows, all the really good shooting ones, like the ones, like I got a, that, I don't know if I ever showed you the bamboo one that I backed, or not backed, but I did the belly with Bowtuff.
No, I have not seen that one.
It's not the prettiest looking freaking bow. It's kind of cool looking, but oh my God, it shoots like a dream, but it's 70 freaking inches, man. It's like,
yeah, you know what I mean? It's just not feasible up there in the stand.
I mean, I already shoot it with a cant, like a 45 degree cant on it. And yeah, out of a tree stand, I got like, especially that killing tree, I'm going to have like one opportunity, you know, there's no,
if that, you know what I mean? 70 inches. That's long.
Yeah.
That's long.
I remember us sitting up there with the 48 and thinking, oh shit, you know, I can't make all the shots that I normally could make.
Right.
Because of the body position I need to put myself in to shoot this thing. So, yeah. Anyway, that's cool, man. So, technically, you got to what? You got till January.
Yeah. So, you know, within the last couple years, it has changed where now the month of January being shotgun season, most of the bow hunters end up going and shooting shotgun. But there's still a few guys where it's legal now to shoot bow during a shotgun season. So I literally hunt all the way through January with the bow, which is great because, you know, those bucks that you've been patterning who have disappeared during the rut, they're going to start to come back after the rut, after they lose some weight, after they thin out, and they're like, hey, I've been running around a little bit. I need to get some food in me. So now they go back to their normal early season patterns where you could focus on, okay, let me get between food source and bedding. Food source and bedding, where you can kind of pattern these deer down a little bit better than what's going on right now. Because right now it's a little unpredictable. Even though that they are running all over the place, they're just unpredictable right now.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But you're in a good spot. Lots of does there. That's what's going to keep those guys coming past you.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I mean, the does are nonstop. It's literally like a train station. Let them on, let them off. Let them on, let them off. And so, yeah, I mean, you can only hope that, you know, that's going to help you and be in your favor, is that the amount of does that are there. But it's still tough. It's not easy. I mean, there are plenty of people that think, you know, hunting Long Island is easy because, you know, there's so many deer. Our population density is it's astronomical for, you know, for the amount of land we have and the deer population. It really is. It's through the roof. The population density is crazy. But that doesn't make it easy. It's not. I mean, it really is at its true definition, it's suburban hunting. Yeah. You know, you have to fight between, you know, even whether or not you find an area to hunt, or that there's deer in, that there's a, you know, there's a sizable mature whitetail in that, you know, that is a shooter. Okay, now you got to figure out, how do I get in there? Is it legal to get in there? Is it private property? Is it public property? If it's private property, can I get permission? If I can't get permission, does it butt up against public property? There's so many factors that play in. I mean, so at times I get a little jealous of you guys out west because you just have an abundance of land. I mean, you know, the
public,
right?
Yeah,
right. You know what I mean? The chances that you're gonna bump into another hunter are a lot slimmer than they are for me. Or I mean, just the human pressure alone. It throws in a monkey wrench into the situation. I was gonna
say, it's not really the hunters. It's just other people using areas.
Right.
Like, remember when I shot Swamp Donkey? Or no, was it Swamp Donkey? No, it wasn't. It was the second of the two twins.
Right.
That kid that was would ride his bike.
Down the trail.
Yeah. And he rode his bike down the trail, and I warned him. I said, please do not come down here, you know. And I killed that buck, and 15 minutes later, that buck was laying on the ground. That kid came back with the bike. Because I ran into him on the ground. He didn't know where my stand was. I ran into him on the ground, and I told him, because I was heading to the stand. I said, please, I'm hunting in here. Do not do that. And he came back through there, disregard everything I said. He stopped, and he's looking at this dead deer on the trail. And I whistled down to him, and I shook my finger back and forth, like, you know. he's got like, oh, shit. That's the guy who told me not to come back here with my bike, and he hustled out of there. But you know,
the hunting influence. I mean, I was 2 weeks ago. I'm sitting in the stand in the morning, and it was after I had already. No, it's about a week ago. So it was after I killed the buck on the 28th. I'm sitting in the same stand, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just, you know, I'm sitting there because I'm putting the time in. Because I'd like to tag out with two bucks this season. I've never done it before out here. It's always been a buck and a doe or two does, whatever it was. I've never tagged out with two shooters in my pocket. And coming down the trail, I see someone starting to walk in from the road, straight from the road down into the trail. And I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me, Ariana. What's going on? But you know, in the situation, I wasn't mad because out come from the brush from one of the trees, it's my friend Gonzalo, and he had no clue I was in this stand. And I whistled down at him, so he kind of got freaked out because he's like, all right, I'm in the middle of the woods. Who's whistling at me? I can't see nobody. And then I'm like, yo, up here. So he looks up, and he's like, oh, man, shit, I'm sorry, bro. He goes, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he, as serious as could be, he looks up at me. He's like, bro, my chickens didn't come home last night. And I started cracking up. And I was like, all right, man, I'll get down and I'll help you look for him. But just like you said, point being is there's so much influence that there is monkey wrenches as far as pressure wise goes in this, the deer's movement in certain areas like this. So it's not easy. It's not easy, you know, because there's a lot of people. I mean, you'll get into social media battles with people about, you know, guys from New York who from upstate say, oh, it's like shooting a fish in a barrel down there. And it's like, OK, well, come down here and make it happen. Let me, you know, show me that it's easy.
You're going to get that all the time, man. Doesn't matter where you hunt, how you hunt. There's always somebody there to take away from what you achieve.
It doesn't matter what aspect it is. That's just life. That's just how people are.
It's jealousy and ignorance.
Yeah. But you know, it touches up. It's like people are like, oh, that's not really that big of a deer. Okay, well, if you consider, you know, the area that these deer are living in, yeah, he's a big buck. Because far there's only, you know, literally three other deer in that area that are bigger than him.
Somebody told you that your buck wasn't big?
It wasn't that big, yeah. A local guy down here who's, you know, made a comment, which I ended up deleting on Instagram, but made a comment saying that he's not that big. You should have let him go.
What an ass. Seriously.
Yeah, whatever. I just didn't even pay mind to it. I just deleted the comment and
delete and block. That's my new philosophy. I had some guy today breaking my chops about the picture that I posted of the heart.
Come on. It's like, okay, then I'm like, you know,
I don't have time for you, dude. I actually answered back, but because I was in a mood this morning. But you had to block. Anyhow, well, man. I hope the rest of the season goes well for you. I can't wait till you send me all the video footage. I'm excited to put it together. And I'm looking forward to next year. I got ideas. I got a lot of ideas.
Yeah, I do too. So, I mean, of course, when, you know, once the season's over, I'm going to start putting a couple of my plans into motion as far as, you know, the scouting goes and you know, the different spots that I'm trying to gain. Because I'm trying to bring, you know, I'm trying to go full force with this now. I mean, I got the bug. I mean, now that it's game over for me with the recurve, like, it's, that's pretty much my direction is right. Recurve bow hunting. Don't get me wrong, there'll probably be trips that we go on or this and that where I'll bring compound, but I'm pretty much going to be solely a recurve hunter. And now that feeling is back for me, I mean, it's literally, now I'm going full force with it. I'm going to bring it to another level out here where it's, I'm going to gain access to properties that, you know, I could, in the past, I would only, you know, dream about. And yeah, I'm just going to make it, I'm going to try to make it as good as an experience as I can for us.
Well, I'm glad you put us in there.
Well, look at it this way. I mean, it's, you know, I gained, oh, here we go. The dogs are barking. I gained a new friend this year for hunting, and I gained, I mean, so yeah, things are going to be definitely ramped up. I mean, I gained a new friend this year for hunting, and it's literally, if you could do it by yourself and get enjoyment out of it, but if you don't have that camaraderie in hunting in general, I mean, it's just not as fun.
I agree.
It's not as fun. I mean, the way we look at it is, yeah, I'm after that big, that large 2x2, that large 4-pointer. Uh-huh. That's who I have my eyes set on for tagging out in this season. But if Mike had shot him yesterday, I'd be just as happy if I did. You know what I mean? And even Brian's the same way. Like Brian said, if I see blades, for me to shoot them. I said, I think you should be the one to shoot them. You're the one that discovered them. And he's like, it doesn't matter. And we're kind of like swapping the same model, so to speak. It's another year, another deer. It really doesn't matter. As long as one of us gets them within you know, our little group, we should all be happy for each other.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, awesome, bro. Keep me posted as the season progresses, and hopefully I get to see another big picture of another big buck go down. And if not, we'll give him hell next year.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, the only way to really make it happen is, you know, people say that it's, good things come to those who wait. No, that's a load of bullshit. You put the work in, and if you put all your ducks in a row, I mean, things, they should come together. They really do. I mean, of course, there's circumstances that, you know, that sway that path and put you on tangents. But if you put the work in, it should happen.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I actually posted a post on Facebook something about that this morning. And yeah, there's no substitute for hard work and time and effort, you know. So I don't disagree with you.
Okay. I gotta wrap up, and I'm sure you do as well.
Yeah.
But John, I thank you for everything. I got a lot of this, you know, this buck and this hunt this year is a lot of it. I have to give thanks to you, you know, for pushing me. You know, I did need that push.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be a part of it, man.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John. Bye.
Bye.